So in this text, the first 8 or 9 verses, we have talked about the path of service, the karma yoga, and the path of love, where you love God, devotion, and you see God in all the beings. Now we are entering the third phase of this book, on the third path, which is called the path of Raja Yoga, or the path of austerities, here mostly in the form of breath control. How through control of the breath, the mind can be controlled and uplifted, and that will be covered in the next few verses. Because there is this third aspect of Raja Yoga, which includes the physical exercises, yoga, the breath control, austerities, and so on. So in this text, the teacher has mostly addressed the subject of breath control. How through control of the breath, the mind can be controlled and then uplifted higher. Because in meditation also, as we do, we observe the breath. So observing breath is one of the ways. But there are fairly advanced techniques called pranayama, which are taught by, professional teachers who have studied this subject professionally. And so doing those pranayama techniques, bhastrika and so on, where you breathe with particular techniques, also helps to quieten the mind. So how does breath help to quieten the mind? Let us talk about that little bit briefly before we go into the subject of breath controlling the mind. How does it work? So it is said that we are composed of 5 sheaths or 5 koshas. Of course, we all know that the subtlest is the consciousness, the om, the consciousness, which is the subtlest, which is our true nature, but we are not able to experience that I am that consciousness. Why? Because this consciousness is covered by 5 layers or 5 sheaths. Just as a sword is covered by a sheath, which totally envelops it, and you cannot see the sword, you have to take the sword out of the sheath for it to become useful. So similarly, the consciousness apparently is covered by the sheaths, even though the consciousness is everywhere and can never be covered, just as the sun, is everywhere. The whole universe, all the 9 planets, everything is illumined by the sun. And the sun extends for millions of miles, it's 93 million miles from us, and it can still illumine the earth. But a simple cloud, a small cloud comes in front, and we say, the sun is covered by the cloud. The sun is not covered. The sun is illumining the entire universe, millions and millions of miles. But my vision is obscured by the little cloud. There may be a cloud of a mile or 2 miles long. And so just as a cloud can obscure the sun, even though the sun is huge and illumine the whole universe, so similarly, my vision of this consciousness is obscured by these 5 sheets. And I'm so caught up in these 5 sheets that I forget or I am not able to reach the consciousness. So what are the 5 sheaths that we are composed of? Our personality, we are made of 5 sheaths or 5 layers. First is called the Annamaya Kosha, the food sheath or the gross body. So that is the most obvious. I am this gross body, or I have this gross body, which is male or female, young or old. And it is made of food. That's why it is called the food sheath. In the mother's womb, it is nourished by food supplied by the mother. And then once the baby starts growing, then the food provided from outside, the milk and grains and all, nourishes the body. And that's how the individual grows. So that's called the gross body, or the food sheath that we can perceive. The second is the physiological functions called pranamaya kosha. So subtler than the gross body is the physiological functions, the functions of breathing, functions of excretion, digestion, and I have listed them here. These are the 5 physiological functions that were described by our rishis thousands of years ago. Even then they knew anatomy, physiology, they had studied that. And so they describe 5 physiological functions these pranas or five physiological functions. Obviously, the obvious one is breath, but there are five, so I'll just briefly mention them. One is prana or intake. So what I take in by food, by water, or by breath, so the intake is called prana intake. That's why we say pranayama, which is the control of breath. Yama means to control, yama, so prana means to control the breath. Then there is apana or excretion. Excretion mean all my excretory organs. Then viana, which is the circulation, as the food goes into the digestive system, it is circulated and it is also digested, and whatever is needed is circulated into the body for nutrition, and what is not needed is excreted. So these four functions we are all familiar with, including in biology and physiology, we study about these four functions. But our rishis, our saints, had described a fifth function called udana, which is the forceful expulsion. So at the time of death, when the individual dies, the body is perished. Body perishes, is about to perish. So he's not dead yet, but he's about to die. He's just taking his last breath. The subtle body, the mind and intellect, is trapped in the gross body, but has to get out. Has to get out and either go to heaven or hell, or and then go and take on a new body. So at that time, udana becomes active and it forcefully pushes out, forcefully expels the mind and intellect. The subtle body is expelled, pushed out of the gross body, and that's the final death. When the mind, intellect goes, then obviously the body at that point is incapable of supporting life. So the last act of death is udana, and the mind and intellect is pushed out. And being subtle, we can't see it. You know, I cannot see your mind or intellect, you cannot see my mind or intellect. But the subtle body is then goes into higher realms and then goes into heaven or hell. And then having enjoyed that, then it waits for a suitable time and takes a suitable body. That is if you believe in rebirth. But even if you don't believe in rebirth, it is the subtle body. They say, no, I go to heaven or hell after death. Now, this gross body doesn't go to heaven or hell. It gets burnt or cremated or buried or, you know, whatever is done to it. So when I say that I go to heaven, or Jesus says you will go to heaven or hell, what they mean is the subtle body will go. So at the time of death, the forceful expulsion of the subtle body is called udana. So pranayam is the physiological function. So the first is the gross body. The second is the physiological body, which is subtler than the gross body. Then subtler than the pranas is the mind. The mind, which is the seat of emotions. And so in meditation, we say you need to control the mind, right? Everybody says you have to control your mind. My mind really wanders. And why does it wander? Because of desires, because of likes and dislikes, because of agitations, disturbances. So I'm not able to control the mind. And so the mind runs either into the past, runs into the future, gets agitated, gets upset. And then we make all the efforts to control the mind. We get headaches and all that. So the mind is the third layer. And the mind is the main problem. The mind is the causes all the stress, causes all the problems. So they say the mind is the source of stress. And so when I have stress, they say my mind is disturbed. So how do we control the mind? That we'll talk today. The fourth layer is called vijnanmaya. It is intellect. It is the intelligence. So I intelligently understand what is the purpose of life, what is the goal of meditation, why am I meditating? And having used my intelligence, having used my intellect, I can control the mind. Talking about intelligence reminds me of a little story. Einstein, as you know, was the most brilliant person of his time. And after having discovered the theory of relativity and quantum physics, every evening he was invited to some, you know, big, you know, gathering, and where he would have to give a speech, and they would have a fancy dinner in his honor and honor him. And so he got tired. He says, every evening I have to go give the same speech, and then they ask the same stupid questions. Mm-hmm. and I have to answer. I'm tired of that. He's driving with his chauffeur. His chauffeur is driving him. He says, I'm tired of this. I wish I could get a break. So chauffeur said, I have a great idea. He says, you and I look kind of alike anyway. You know, we are approximately the same age. And this place we are going, has anybody seen you? He says, no, no, it's a different town. Nobody has ever seen me. He says, why don't I give your speech? You know, I have heard you give this speech 100 times. And I even know all the questions they ask. So I'll give the speech and I'll answer the questions. So Einstein said, that's a great idea. At least tonight I'll get a break. So they change clothes once they reach the place. He puts on Einstein's robe and fancy, you know, clothes. And Einstein puts on his chauffeur's hat and his chauffeur's little jacket and sits in the back of the room. And the chauffeur goes to the front and everybody applauds him. And he gives the beautiful speech because he has heard it, you know, the same speech on relativity. And everybody claps. Any question. So people get up, ask the same questions they always ask. And he addresses them beautifully. But finally, one physics professor sitting in the front row gets up and asks a very complicated question on quantum physics, relativity, which the chauffeur has never heard. So what should he do? He thinks about it. He says, you know what? This question is so simple. Even my chauffeur sitting in the back of the room can answer that. So that is called using your intelligence. So we can control the mind either by controlling the breath or by controlling the intellect. And the fifth is the Anandamaya Kosha, the bliss sheath or the vasanas. So this consciousness in me is covered by the vasanas, by my identification with my intellect, my mind, or my body. Body consists of both the gross body and the physiological function. So we get lost in these four layers, in my desires, in my thoughts, in my emotions, and we forget the consciousness. So the goal of meditation is to reach that inner state of silence, the inner state of consciousness, the inner state of. So now how do we control the mind? So they say the mind can be controlled by the subtle. What you have to do is control the mind directly is difficult. So you take the help of the intellect, okay, by intelligently thinking and calculating and planning. And the intelligence, that aspect will cover after a few verses, after 4 or 5 verses, when the path of knowledge comes, then we'll see how through use of the intellect, we can control the mind. These 3 or 4 verses that we are going to study will talk about controlling the mind by controlling the breath. So how do I control the mind? So what happens is, let us read the verse and then we'll talk about this control of breath. This is verse number 11 on page 37.
वायुरोदनालियते मनः जालपक्षिवत् रोधसाधनम्
सो वायुरोदनात् सो बाय कंट्रोल ऑफ द ब्रेथ बाय कंट्रोल ऑफ द ब्रेथ लियते मनः. The mind goes into absorption, dissolution, or the mind becomes still. So by control of the breath, the mind becomes still. How? Just as jala pakshivat, just as a bird that is flying around, and then what happens sometimes if they want to capture the bird, they throw a net. And so the net captures the bird, and the bird is now unable to fly. It flutters around, and then it's captured in the net. So as long as the net is there, that's what he says, jala pakshivat rodha sadhanam. It is a method of controlling the mind, just as the net controls the bird. Now, how long is the bird controlled? Is the bird controlled forever? No, as long as the net is there, the bird is unable to fly. Or if there is a cage and the bird is put in the cage, then the bird is temporarily controlled, unable to fly. But the moment you open the cage or the moment you remove the net, the bird instantly disappears. So the bird, just as it is temporarily controlled by a net, so also by controlling the breath, we are temporarily able to control the mind. That's why when we do meditation, we do various techniques. You know, we relax the body, and then we say, observe your breath. Now, as I said, there are teachers who are accomplished, who can teach pranayama. You know, Kapalabhati, Bhastrika, those are various techniques of breathing. I don't know them, I cannot teach them. But there are accomplished yoga teachers who can teach how to breathe. In fact, the Sri Ravi Ravi Shankar, his whole teaching of meditation is based on breath control, on control of the breath. So there are various techniques which should be learned from a teacher. You should not try to learn these techniques on the internet or watching a video, but sit in front of a teacher. But there are two techniques that can be done without the help of a teacher. And one, of course, is breath observation, where you just observe the breath. You close the eyes and observe the breath. And as you observe the breath, which, you know, we all know, we are familiar with, the mind becomes very still. But it is only temporary. When you get up from meditation, then your mind starts running, just as the bird, when it gets out of the net, it starts flying. The other technique which we also practice is anulom vilom, which is very simple, where you just breathe through one nostril and out through the other nostril. That also doesn't require a teacher because it's not very complicated. So these two methods can be practiced by all of us, and that's why I give that in my handout in the flyer, because that can be practiced by anybody without the help of a teacher. So what happens is that I want to control the mind. The mind is subtle. It's not easy for me to control. So as I said, either by knowledge or when you control the gross, the breath is under my control. Not permanently, I cannot stop breathing for a long time, but at least for a few seconds I can stop breathing. So as I breathe in and hold the breath and breathe out and hold the breath. So by careful control of breathing, you can regulate the mind. So by using the gross, which is the physiological functions, which are under my control, the mind is temporarily stilled. And so that's why breathing can be done even anywhere, as we have said. If you are in a very stressful situation, things are not going well during your day, or the work is not well, or you're having some problem, we say you sit in one corner, close your eyes, and just observe your breath. Or just take a few deep breaths, and you will find that your mind, which was agitated, very quietly comes to stillness. But the problem with this technique is that there is no purification of mind involved. That's why pranayama is becoming so popular all over the world. People are teaching pranayama, they are learning pranayama, because they say you don't have to do all this purification of mind. You know, which we have studied, to purify the mind, to reduce the vasanas, you need to do service, you need to serve the world, you need to remove your negativities, you need to remove anger and greed and jealousy, and you need to love God, and you need to serve Him, and you need to see God in everybody, you need to be unselfish, all that is required. They say for pranayama, you don't need to do that, just sit and breathe. And so what people are looking for is a shortcut. You know, people say, I don't want to go through this complicated process of purifying my mind and reducing my vasanas. I want to directly reach. And sometimes people do that. But the fact of the matter is that doing this pranayama, in fact, many times there are seminars, weekend seminars, where thousands of people will attend or hundreds of people. And all weekend they will be learning how to breathe and all that. What that does is, in my opinion, may help you in blood pressure, may help you in stress, may help you temporarily quieten the mind. But to realize the truth, to reach the highest mind purification is a must. without purification of mind, you can never reach the highest. And so just to thinking that by doing pranayam, and a lot of teachers even promise, you know, you do yoga, you do pranayam. Yoga is again at the body level. You can reach the highest. Yes, you can get, you know, quietude of mind. You can get some amount of stress relief. But there is no substitute for knowledge. Knowledge, that's why even in the Gita, Shri Krishna says, nahi jnanena sadrisham pavitram iha vidyate. There is no greater purifier than knowledge. Another place he says, just as a fire burns all the wood, if you put wood in the fire, it burns. So similarly, all our ignorance, all our negativities get burnt in the fire of knowledge. So knowledge is a must, and we will be talking about knowledge later on in the text. But here Raman Maharishi addresses in the next three or four verses how through breath control the mind can be temporarily controlled, can be made ready for meditation. So that's why breathing or breath control is a preliminary step to meditation, to getting the knowledge. And pranayam is very useful. I'm not trying to discount that. There is a lot of benefit of pranayam. A lot of the physical problems can be helped. You know, those who really practice and teach it, they say even heart. Because when you're breathing efficiently, because our main function in life is to breathe, right? And 12 times a minute you have to breathe. And how you breathe is very important, because when you take a deep breath, then what happens is they say that most individuals use only a very small percentage of our lung capacity. When we are normal breathing, a lot of the lungs are left unexpanded. But when breathing is done deep, when you take a deep breath and really expand the lungs, then what happens is the lung portion that is not being used is utilized. And so more efficient transport of oxygen happens. So when you breathe deep, you get more air in your lungs, the lungs expand. And that's why a lot of people, when they have this, you know, when they chronically don't breathe well, then the lungs remain collapsed, and such lungs can get pneumonia, can get all those problems. That's why they say learn to breathe deep and just take deep breaths and then breathe out fully. You know, that's why they say take a deep breath in as deep as you can, hold your breath, and then breathe out fully, completely expel, and then again hold your breath. So these things, you know, we can do without the, you know, help of a teacher. So when you expand your lungs fully, then the oxygen is circulated to the entire body. That, you know, improves your brain function, improves your heart, your muscles, you know, your digestion, because every part of the body depends on the oxygen supplied by the blood, because all our mitochondria, these are these chemical factories, all depend on oxygen. So the more oxygen you take in, the better it is. And then when you expel, then when you are expelling that carbon dioxide, then all the negativities are also being expelled. In fact, yoga teachers also say that when you breathe in, you say, I'm breathing in all the goodness, all because the Lord has made the air, oxygen, for me to breathe. So I'm breathing in all the divine grace and the divine glory and the Lord's benevolence. So when I'm breathing in, I'm breathing all the goodness, and may my body and mind be filled with that goodness. And then when I'm breathing out, I'm breathing out all my negativities, my anger, my greed, my jealousy, my hatred. So through breathing, a lot of things can be accomplished. Blood pressure control, stress control, better health, even removal of negativities, you know, mentally. So that is the advantage. So that's why they say that control of the breath is like controlling the bird in the net. But when the net is removed, the bird can fly. So similarly, the mind is temporarily controlled, and which is good. You know, so your mind is stilled, your mind is controlled, and in that silence of the mind, then you can meditate on who am I. But how to permanently control the mind, we'll be talking about in the next few weeks. So today we'll talk about temporary mind control. And then Raman Maharishi in the later verses will tell us how to permanently get the mind under my control. In fact, they say you can destroy the mind. What do we mean by destroy the mind? We'll talk about in the next few weeks. Destroy the mind does not mean that you become a total idiot and you can't think, but this mind that judges, the mind that creates the problems, is removed or destroyed. So that is what we'll talk in the next few weeks. So today I thought I'll just introduce the subject of pranayam and breath control and how we can control the mind by breathing. Any questions?
I feel like cardio is good for breath control too, like working out hard, running, and they say you get a runner's high, or, you know, just
right, right. Yeah, that does this, the circulatory system. Mm-hmm. So these are all connected.
Yeah.
You know, when you're exercising, then you're obviously, then your breathing is better, even your digestion is better, your intake, you feel like you eat healthier, you know, you eat mm-hmm. more when you exercise. So yeah, they're all connected. That's why they've given the four physiological functions, you know, exercise, breath control, intake, excretion. So just if you eat healthier, then, you know, your all the four functions are better. So, yeah, so they are connected, yes.
Learned from internet that you're telling us, don't go to internet, try to learn
some of the complicated breathing techniques. There are techniques called Kapalbhati and Bhastrika and all, which are, there are techniques to breathe, which, if you learn on your own or from the internet, you could damage your body. So do the simple breathing. Just breathe in and out. Just observe the breath. But if you really want to learn, that these techniques do help, though. Even to reduce the stomach, you know, there are breathing techniques which can make your stomach smaller, which can, you know, help in a lot of health conditions. But then there are pranayam teachers who will teach you and who will observe and make sure you're doing it correctly. So just as golf cannot be learned from the internet, you know, you have to have a teacher who will show you that you're hitting the ball correctly, your stance is correct, your knees are properly bent, your shoulders. And otherwise, you will just hit the ball anywhere and everywhere, and, you know, you will never learn. So similarly, and you could even damage yourself. If you swing the wrong way, I have heard of people getting, you know, shoulder surgeries even after golf. A friend of mine actually had to have his shoulder operated on because he hurt it playing golf. And then he also injured his back severely. I've never heard of golf injuries, but this guy had multiple golf injuries. I think because he's too obsessive, you know, he has to be perfect. So he tries too hard.
Yeah.
And so he probably was swinging. Literally, he's had two or three operations. I'm not joking. From golf injuries. I heard of football injuries. I've heard of, you know. But never heard of golf injuries. But this guy actually injured himself playing golf. And he has severe back problems from playing golf. I never heard of somebody getting hurt. So is that because he probably, you know, didn't learn properly? He just started playing on his own and he was too serious. That's what happens if you take things too seriously.
Yeah, we don't have prior injuries.
Huh?
Yeah, you know. So all these things you are, so that's why you need an instructor, especially the breathing.
This hyperventilate reminds me of a story. This kid was his birthday and suddenly he got very anxious and started hyperventilating. So his mother says, give him balloons. So his father says, I thought in hyperventilating, you're supposed to give a brown paper bag. She says, no, I don't want to inflate 100 balloons by myself. Let him do it. So hyperventilating. Yeah, you had a question.
No, my mother used to say that pranayama done wrong or without the teacher.
Right.
Damage your mind that you could actually get crazy.
True.
Yeah.
But that's why what we do is very simple breathing, because I myself don't know pranayama, so I don't try to teach.
I've got the Kundalini yoga.
Yeah.
They do the breath of fire, the deep breathing.
But that again should be done with the help of a teacher.
Yeah, I go to the teacher. They have the teacher there.
Yeah, if there's a proper teacher. But a lot of if you go on the internet, there are a lot of videos on Kundalini.
Yeah.
And raising the Kundalini. I don't think that those kind of things should be learned from the internet. You have to learn it from a teacher.
Yeah, they're good teachers.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah.
Wayne Dyer, he puts out CDs. He has one on breathing. That should be avoided.
No, if it is simple breathing, I'm sure if he has put it out, it must be easy. Yeah, I would avoid those. If they are complicated, it should be supervised by a human. Yeah, by somebody who is accomplished in that. If it is a comp, I know there are, like in our yoga, you know, we have things like Kapalbhati, Bhastrika. These are all various names of the yogic techniques where you breathe in a particular way, like that, and you do that. Mm-hmm. But that has to be supervised by a teacher, you know, I think.
Dhaval is very good, you know.
Yeah, if Dhaval, yeah, he would be.
Every Tuesday, mostly Tuesday, you know, 6:30.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Actually, people who are spiritually evolved can see that.
What?
They can see the subtle body leaving the top of the head.
Does
yes.
it have colors or is it?
You know, it's like a subtle.
Like clear?
Yeah, like almost like a smoky thing, you know, leaving. But it's very, even subtler than smoke. But people who are spiritually advanced can see that. They can see the yogis and all, but of course you and me, we can't. When the person dies, it dies. But yeah, it is extremely subtle.
No, with the breathing, you know, you can see that the time, the last, you know, everybody's breathing past a different time. The breathing is different.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. The time of death, you see that particular kind of, yeah, the nurses have all seen it, the labored breathing or the terminal breathing, yeah, before it. It becomes very erratic, the breathing, and then the person dies. And that's when this udana becomes active. That's the only... Or they say also during sneezing, that's another time, because you're forcefully expelling. You know, you're expelling the air when sneezing. So that is when it becomes minimally active. But the main benefit or the use of udana is at the time of death. But forceful expulsion... Yeah, no, they can, like aura, you know, I cannot see anybody's aura, but there are people who are spiritually connected. They can see people's auras and whether it's an angry aura or a gentle aura or a spiritual aura. So they do talk about it and it's a real science. It's not bluff, you know, people can see auras. And they say you can see red color, blue color, green color, and red signifies anger, blue signifies peace, you know, white, you know, things, black. I'm sorry?
Like the chakra colors?
Yeah, the chakra colors, but also the aura around the individual, around each one of us has an aura around us.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on your state of mind, the aura also changes color. Mm-hmm. And it becomes gentle, it becomes black. So the people who are spiritually connected can see auras, and they talk about it. I'm.
Do you think there's ever a time where people don't get expelled?
No, everywhere. At the time of death, the subtle body has to be expelled, but it may not go to heaven or hell. It may keep circulating here and become a ghost.
Okay, that was my question.
Yeah, so what happens is sometimes the subtle body does not go and stays around here. And that happens for two or three reasons. One is if that person has excessive attachment, like excessive attachment to his money or to a child, you know, where he's or she is so attached that they don't want to leave, so that subtle body becomes a ghost. Or they say, people who mourn excessively, if you cry excessively for a person, that's why in our scriptures they say 13 days of mourning is allowed. For 13 days you can, it's okay to cry for a dear one. But after that you let them go, you say, okay, now time is up, now you can. So you release them and you stop. I mean, you of course you still miss that person if it's a child or a parent or a brother or a sister. But excessive crying or mourning does not allow that subtle body to leave. So, yeah, it's described that. So, if that's why they say too much of crying or mourning for a dead one is not good. Because some people think it's a sign of, you know, love. That there was one person who was crying for her grandchild for 6 months. Every day crying, till the tears came out and her eyes were bloodshot and, oh. And then I met her and I said, what are you doing? Why are you crying for your grand? I know it's very sad your grandchild died. But it's been 6 months and what you are doing is by excessive mourning, you're not letting the child go. So too much of crying is also not good. Because ultimately what I told her is that I know it's too unfortunate she died at age 11 or 12. But the fact is none of us is going to live forever. Whoever is born will die. And she had come to this earth only to fulfill her desires and her vasanas and her karmas. And 11 years was the amount of time that she was supposed to live. And at that time, her desires had been fulfilled for this life. Her karmas had been exhausted. And so now she has to move on to a new life. And so that's why they say the time of death is determined at the time of birth. Each one, the time is already, some people die at age of few hours. You know, child is born and dies. Some few days, few months, few years. Some people live till 100. So it depends on each individual what is their lifespan. It's not determined by God or by somebody sitting up there, but based on my karmas, based on my actions, and based on my vasanas or my desires, my time on earth is predestined. And once that time is come, whether once my karmas are exhausted, once my vasanas for that particular life have been already indulged in, then the excuse for death may happen. It may be a plane crash. It may be a drunk driver hitting you. It may be an illness. Maybe an accident, you know. I mean, you say, oh, why did the young person have to die? It was, she had decided to leave, or he had decided to leave. So it's not God who gives us a lifespan. We determine our lifespan based on our karmas and based on our vasanas. So that's what I told her. I said her life in this was 11 years, and that was meant to be. And I know it's sad. I'm not saying that it is a pleasant thing, but the point is excessive holding on to that sorrow also is harmful to you and harmful to that spirit. So you let them go, okay, 13 days are up, or whatever time of mourning, and say, okay, now child, you can go, or mother or father, you know, I release you. And let them go on with their journey. You don't have to hold on to them. You still love them in your heart, but excessive mourning or crying is not good. So that also creates spirits. So these are two reasons. If the spirit is excessively attached to somebody, or somebody is excessively attached to the death person, both ways.
But when they're not a ghost, they can still like look down on you, or are they in another realm?
No, they can't look down. Yeah. One is they can be looking down right from around, but another one is even from higher realms, they can bless you. That's why these mediums, they can put you in contact with your mother or father, and they might be in higher realms. They may even have taken birth, but the subtle body, you know, you still contact. But those are higher realms. Yeah, that's okay. I mean, again, I don't know how accurate it is, but some of the mediums do claim they can put you in touch with your higher, with your dead parents and all that. So I don't know. There's a lot of, different theories and different practices. But what I believe is, you know, instead of worrying about all those things, try to be a good person, try to help as many as you can, pray, meditate, serve, and that's it. You know, instead of worrying about this life, next life, what will happen, spirit, ghost, and all, worry about what I have, you know, what am I doing now, instead of worrying about afterlife or future life or past life. You know, right, the world is in front of me. Serve the world like you're seeing God. And that is the best. You know, serve God, serve the world, pray, meditate, and then let him worry about it. It's his world.
It's fun to think about, though.
It's fun to think about, and it's okay to discuss, but not too much to worry about.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't spend too much time. You know, just do what you're supposed to do, and just do it well.